assist individuals and businesses in establishing comprehensive asset protection plans. Professor, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. How is a small business legal protection altered when a partnership is involved?
You know, depending on what type of entity the business had created, whether it's a partnership, a corporation, an LLC, etc., each partner might be liable for one another's debts, liabilities, and obligations. So when you're tying up a business, again, depending on what type of business entity you have to be very sure that you're doing everything correctly, otherwise you could have a lot of debts and liabilities that are charged to you personally for something that may be perhaps you didn't even do.
Why do you think small business owners are struggling so much in this economy? Is it something that they should do different in their structuring, their hiring, in terms of reinventing themselves? What is it? Why do you feel there's such a challenge for established business and creating new ones in the economy?
You know, well, in today's bad economy, you know, unfortunately, people are spending less and less money. You know, nobody really wants to spend the money. With that being said, businesses aren't making that much money, so they're forced to cut people in various areas. And it's my belief that, you know, businesses are cutting people in the wrong area. For example, you know, when money doesn't come in, they cut their marketing department. You know, marketing is probably one of the most important things, you know, that a business can do. You know, without a marketing department, you can't bring in new business. So I think what's happening is, as a result of the slow economy, you know, businesses are getting hit and then they're forced to cut in areas, and I think they're just choosing to cut in the wrong areas.
What about the uncertainty in the market?
You know, that's always played a big role on business. You know, nobody wakes up the next morning knowing exactly what's going to happen. You just never know what's going to happen in life. You never know what's going to happen in the economy. And that's something that certainly you always want to be prepared for, but not something that you can necessarily plan for. So you always want to make sure that you're aware of your business surroundings, you know, both domestically and internationally, and make sure that when something does happen, you know, that you're proactive as opposed to reactive and you take care of things immediately.
Do you think that the market could be less regulated, and if so, in what areas?
I do. I mean, I think, you know, again, depending on what type of business line somebody's in, you know, there is a lot of regulations, you know, whether it's governmental or state or federal. It really puts a burden on businesses who are actually trying to do business so they can employ Americans and things of that nature. And certainly, I think that, you know, if you can let the entrepreneurs be the entrepreneurs, you know, you'd have a much better chance of the economy turning around.
Do you think that the younger generation has prepared themselves educationally for the future of the economy, like in healthcare and nursing, in terms of having the right degrees, the tough and challenging degrees, which heavy emphasis on the math and science? Have they just done enough to get by in college just to graduate? And what would you say to college kids today, what they need to do to prepare themselves better for the future job markets in the new economy?
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't think they've done enough, to be honest with you. You know, unfortunately, you know, this generation is not like previous generations. Unfortunately, what it seems like is everybody wants to do as little as possible. However, everybody wants to reap as much benefits as possible. And people need to realize that without education and without hard work, you know, you're not going to reap those benefits. You know, they feel that they're entitled to it, which just doesn't happen. I think that kids these days and anybody in school really need to start paying attention, you know, really needs to start getting some experience. You know, if I was in school today and I was trying to get out and get a job, you know, it's extremely difficult. I'd go to, you know, 10 different places, you know, asking them if I can work for free. You know, you need to sell yourself. You need that experience. So, you know, just getting a degree these days, you know, is simply not enough. I mean, if you would have asked me, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, when I had children, would I send my kids to college, I would have told you, you know, 200%. At this point, you know, I don't know, maybe 50%. You know, maybe you take that money and you give it to them and help them start a business. But unfortunately, even when you know, graduate today, you know, you can't even find a job.
You know, all salient points. How else can small business owners going forward, protect their valuable information and assets. Which is their asset?
You know, first of all, you know, a business needs to know what their assets are. And there's a lot of different types of assets. You know, people think when they think assets, just physical assets. You know, what money's in the bank? You know, what computers do I have in my desk? But there's a lot of other assets that they have that they probably don't know they have. For example, intellectual property. You know, their domain name, their phone number, their email addresses. I mean, if somebody got their phone number, they'd be put out of business the next day, and another business would increase hundreds of thousands or millions in sales just from the calls they're getting. So what my new book, Financial Self-Defense, stresses is asset protection. You know, every business is sued on average 4 or 5 times over their lifetime, and you really need to take asset protection steps to button up everything that your company has.
You know, I got to tell you, your book is a good one. I like what you said about cash loans effectively equity script property, but they have their drawbacks. You talked about this when you talked about creating an obligation-based lien. Could you expand on that, please?
Sure. And just so you know, the first step with anything is education. And, you know, you mentioned my book and Armstrong. What I want to do for any of your listeners, because I know it is a tough economy out there, if they go to our website at www.assetprotectionattorneys.com, as long as they tell us that they heard about us on your show, if they email us, I'm going to send them a free copy of that new book.
Wow, thank you. You're generous.
No, it's my
financial self-defense, how to protect everything you own from everyone and every time. Talk about the lien.
Okay, you know, first of all, let me explain what equity stripping is. You know, the way I put it to my clients is, what's a $100,000 Mercedes worth if you owe $95,000? What's $1 million house worth if you owe $975,000? So as a business owner, you want to take any and all assets that you have, whether they're tangible or intangible, and you want to make them as valueless as possible. And the reason you want to do that is you want to make yourself as an unattractive candidate for a lawsuit as possible. You know, there's two parts to a lawsuit. The first part is, you know, are they going to win the case? What's the judge going to say? What's the jury going to say? The second part to the lawsuit is, can they collect against you? If you can shield all of your assets, you know, one way being the equity stripping, and you can show the creditor that they are not able to attach your assets, they're not going to want to sue you in the first place. So equity stripping is a great way of doing that. And all it is taking loans and obligations and essentially mortgaging your assets. So for example, you know, most people, they start a business, they put $100,000 in, you know, that's all they do. Well, if there's any creditors, the creditors are going to get paid first before them. You know, if you've put money into your business, and this is just one of a dozen ways that we talk about in the book, but if you put money into your business, why not secure that money as a loan on your business? You know, file the UCC, file the mortgage, whatever the proper documents are for the certain asset in your state, but that way you're first in line. Now, if the business doesn't succeed, the creditors have to get behind you because you're first in line. So I always tell my clients, make sure that any and all assets they have are equity stripped by putting some sort of loan or obligation against each asset.
How does divorce and foreclosure play into your recommendations?
You know, you have to be very careful with divorce and foreclosure, and they're two different animals. You know, in the new book, Financial Self-Defense, we have a whole chapter on divorce, and we actually have a whole chapter on foreclosure. And again, if anybody goes to our website at www.assetprotectionattorneys.com, as long as they mention your show and email us, we're going to send them a free copy of the new book. In regards to foreclosure, you know, that's something that normally a client has personally guaranteed. So, for example, if there's a short sale or if there's a foreclosure deficiency, the bank or the lender is going to go after the client personally for the amount of the deficiency. So I tell all my clients, make sure that all of your personal assets are protected. You know, so for example, if you have checking, savings, stocks, bonds, brokerage accounts, those should never ever be in your personal name. Those should always be in the name of, you know, perhaps a domestic asset protection limited partnership, maybe some sort of domestic or international trust, you know, but some sort of business entity. You know, the key is own nothing but control everything. If you have rental properties, vacation homes, again, never have them in your own name. Have them in a domestic Domestic Asset Protection LLC, some sort of domestic or international LLC or trust. There's so many different ways that you can own your property that are not in your personal name, so God forbid there ever is a short sale or a foreclosure deficiency, they can't go after your personal assets. And it's so important to do this from a proactive...
Hold this point. We're coming back. We're coming back with our guest, financial self-defense, Hilda Presser, attorney. How to protect everything you own, every
sports, entertainment, and political celebrities meet. You're listening to Armstrong Williams.
Please continue about protecting your assets.
Sure. So what I was saying is, you know, you have to be proactive. You know, when anybody enters into a mortgage, they don't expect that a year from now or 10 years from now they're going to lose their job and they're not going to be able to afford the monthly payment. You know, they're going in there, they're happy, and at that day and at that point, they probably can afford it. So you always want to make sure you're proactive and make sure that all of your personal assets are totally buttoned up. That way, God forbid, 10, 20 years down the road, if there's ever a short sale or foreclosure deficiency, you know, if anybody tries to come against your personal assets based on the personal guarantee, you really have nothing. And that just all goes back to, should really never have anything in your personal name.
But I also found it interesting when you started talking about RIAs, investing in a single member LLC. That's a new one.
Sure. We have a chapter in our book that really talks about exempt assets. And essentially what an exempt asset is, an exempt asset is a class of assets that's protected by state laws. And they're different in every single state. And on our website at assetprotectionattorneys.com, we actually have a list by state of all the different exempt assets for your state, so you could check them out. But just to give you an example, in Florida, life insurance is an exempt asset, which means if you have life insurance, if somebody sues you, they can't take it. Annuities, IRAs, 401ks are protected in Florida. So those are exempt assets for the state of Florida. Again, every state is different. If you potentially have a state where your IRA or some class of asset is not protected, well then in that case, again, like we talked about previously, you don't want to keep it in your personal name. So one way is you take the IRA, you have the IRA invest in an asset protection LLC. It might be domestic, it might be international, but now you can still invest it. It's still categorized as an IRA. However, instead of it being in your personal name, which we know is a no-no because a lawsuit, a car accident, a creditor could take it away from you, now the IRA really doesn't have anything in it. You know, it's all been dumped into the LLC, which would be protected from any potential threats and creditors.
How do people better manage making sure that when financial crisis come, that they have saved and shown enough respect for their earnings in a way that they're prepared for?
You know, unfortunately, today people aren't as conservative as they should be. You know, what I see, at least down in South Florida, is people are living way beyond their means. It's not even that they're living on their means, they're living way beyond their means. And the problem is that, you know, when someone starts making money, you know, they think it's never going to end. They don't realize that there's cycles and there's good months and there's bad months. They just assume when they have a good month that no month will be worse. You know, they start buying bigger homes, more cars, things that they might consider assets, but you and I both know are actually liabilities. So, you know, I think the best thing is to be as conservative as possible as you can. You know, don't plan for today, plan for 10 years from today. You know, and what I tell all my clients is that for every 60 minutes you spend making money, spend 60 seconds thinking about how to protect it. You know, it used to be you wanted to think about how to grow it. Well, I think that way of thinking should be out the door. At today's day, in today's economy, you have to think about how to keep it and how to conserve it. You know, I tell my clients, I will never make you a penny richer. I will just make sure you don't lose what you have.
And that is important. And who are you protecting them from, including themselves?
Sure. Well, as asset protection attorneys, you know, we help our clients protect any asset they have from any financial threat. So our clients are lawyers, doctors, financial advisors, business owners, people who inherited money, really anybody in the world. The type of assets we're helping them protect might be as simple as checking, savings, stocks, bonds, brokerage accounts, primary homes, rental or vacation homes, homes, cars, boats, planes, even their businesses. So it might be membership interest in an LLC or shares in a corporation. And we're helping these people protect these assets against any financial threat. And there's dozens and dozens of financial threats, but in today's day and age, the main threats are lawsuits, car accidents, short sale and foreclosure deficiencies, divorce, creditors, judgments, really anything that can take away what you've worked your whole life to obtain.
And especially the unplanned, things that you could never see coming.
And Armstrong, you know, I tell every client, nobody wakes up in the morning and expects to get sued. So I think we have the same line of thinking.
What are the fraudulent transfer badges?
Sure. A fraudulent transfer is when you take an asset and you transfer it out of your name to either another person or an entity. You do so for less than fair market value, and as a result, the creditor doesn't get paid. So, for example, let's say you were being sued and you had $200,000 to your name. If you took that $200,000 and gave it to your friend John, John didn't give you anything back, no house, no services, nothing, and then as a result, the person who is suing you for the $200,000, there's no money for him because you've given it to John. You know, that would be a clear and convincing fraudulent transfer. And with any asset protection plan, you want to make sure that you avoid at all costs fraudulent transfers. Because if you do so, what a judge can do is a judge can order John, the person you've transferred the assets to transfer them back to you, and now the creditor can get them. So you're not saving anything. You're going to waste money and legal fees. You're going to bring your friends and family into the lawsuit. Some of the things that the judges look at, you know, when they look at these transfers are, you know, when did the transfer occur? You know, were you currently being sued or did you know you were going to be sued? You know, when you transferred the money or the asset, did you get anything back in return or did you essentially just give it to them? You know, after you transferred the asset, did you still have money where you could pay the creditor, you know, if he won? And also, most importantly, they always want to look at your intent. You know, did you have the intent to defraud or hinder or delay a creditor? So again, you know, whenever we do an asset protection plan, I tell my clients always avoid fraudulent transfers at all costs.
And fraudulent people.
Correct. You know, you got to be so careful these days of who you get into business with. You see so many con artists and schemes that are going around throughout the whole country. You know, I've always made it a personal, essentially, rule for myself. You know, I don't do business with anyone that I haven't known for at least 10 years.
And you always maintain that.
100%, because you never know a person. And, you know, what happens these days is you meet someone once, you know, at a dinner or a bar or, you know, at a meeting in your office, you know, they gain your trust and all of a sudden you're investing with them. Well, you know, you don't know this guy from Adam. And I'm very conservative. You know, again, I'm in the mindset of make sure you keep what you have. You know, don't worry about doubling or tripling it because, you know, those just aren't the times today. And you just have to be so conservative. You know, everybody's out to get you and you really need to be careful.
You know, it is true, your point about only owning protective assets that are yours in your own name. Could you talk about that?
Sure. And, you know, again, Armstrong, if people go to our website at assetprotectionattorneys.com and email us, as long as they mention your show, I'm going to give them a free copy of our latest best-selling book, Financial Self-Defense, the revised edition. And we do have a chapter in that. And that's probably the most important advice that I can heed to anybody. You know, own nothing but control everything. You know, if something's in your personal name, whether it's a house, a car, a checking account, a business, I don't care what the class of asset is, if you're sued, a creditor can take it, okay? If it's not in your name, if it's in some sort of legal protective entity, and again, on our website, assetprotectionattorneys.com, we literally have hundreds of pages of information about all the different entities, the LLCs, the limited partnerships, the family limited partnerships, the domestic and international trusts, you know, and if you classify your assets correctly and title them correctly outside of your personal name and into one of these protective entities, then when you're sued, the creditors will not be able to get your assets. And that's because just like the law looks at you and I as separate people, the law looks at you and your company as a separate person. Now, certainly you need to make sure that it's set up correctly and you're maintaining it correctly, you know, that way they don't, you know, pierce the corporate veil and look at it as an alter ego of yourself. But if done correctly, you can literally shelter every single asset you own, you know, from everyone every time. And that's exactly what the book talks about.
It's critical. You know, it really. What is your advice on insurance policies? And, you know, I also want to get your final thoughts as we head into the last few minutes of this interview.
Sure. I think insurance is great. I tell all my clients, buy as much as you can because it's cheap and it helps you sleep at night. But again, I tell them, don't solely rely on it. Only about 30% of insurance claims are ever paid. You know, what if you have $300,000 in insurance but you're sued for $1 million? You know, who do you think is going to pay the difference? Your insurance company might go bankrupt. You know, if I said that 5 years ago, you'd laugh me off the show. But today we have Fortune 500 companies and we also have, you know, banks going out of business. Who's to say the insurance company won't be next? So again, I'm a big proponent of buying as much insurance as you can, but you need an asset protection plan. You need as many layers and as many speed bumps and as many firewalls as possible because everybody is out to get you. I call it the belt and suspenders approach.
You know, I find it interesting your advocacy of selling for no cash down when you're strapped.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, sometimes, you know, what you may think is an asset is really a liability. I mean, I have so many clients who have businesses or homes or cars or whatever the asset is that they actually think it's an asset. But with that being said, you know, if you have a monthly payment, that is a liability, not an asset. And sometimes just getting the liability out of your hands and stop the bleeding, sometimes it's better than trying to hold on and keep the asset.
You know, you really... It is so true. It's only if you have an asset that's paying you monthly interest, is it an asset?
Yeah, an asset shouldn't cost you anything. It should make you money. You know, you shouldn't be writing a check every month. If you're, you know, people think their house is their biggest asset. I disagree. Your house is your biggest liability.
Unless there's no mortgage.
Unless there's no mortgage, and unless you have the money to fix the $30,000 roof when it goes wrong, and the driveway, and when the glass breaks. I mean, there's a lot of things that can go wrong that, you know, you don't presume. And don't get me wrong, I mean, I think, you know, real estate is great. I mean, you know, there's not many other things to invest your money in these days. But, you know, again, just understand, you know, it's never as good as it looks. And whether you're buying a house or whether you're starting a business, you always end up paying a lot more than you think so originally.
Thank you so much for joining us, and I encourage everyone to go out and get your book. All the best to Hiller Press. What a great book. You got to go out and get it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.